Welcome to this week's edition of Dugout Dish Podcast. I am Andy Kirikides, joined by my wonderful and handsome co-host, Keith Blasser. How are we doing?
Great. How are you?
Good. Today's episode, we are going to talk about the nitty-gritty of things that you need to consider, things that you should be looking for as you go through the recruiting process. We all know that there are some big boxes to check. Got to play the long game. It's not just about the Twitter graphic or how cool the uniforms are or what the name on the front of the jersey says. We know it's something that we've preached for a long time, and we're going to preach it at you today in depth, is that there's a lot of things that are really important that have a massive impact on your immediate experience when you get to campus, but are also going to have long-term ramifications. So we're going to take some time to dig into this topic. Coach, where do you want to start?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I think probably the first place to start when we're talking about, you know, you've fielded your offers and you're kind of getting down to where it is you're deciding that you want to go. I think the main thing you're going to want to feel as though you're going to be comfortable within that baseball program, not only with with the coaching staff and with your teammates. We've talked about this quite a bit, you know, when in a lot of our interviews about how much time you spend playing baseball and practicing and traveling and everything, like, you know, especially if you're, you know, it doesn't matter if you're playing one, two, or three. You know, you're spending an inordinate amount of time with your teammates and your coaches. So you want to make sure that you're comfortable with them and feel as though they're going to have your best interest at heart. They're going to be able to develop you to the player it is that they feel as though you're capable of being. And if you don't feel that way, like if you're not getting those vibes, or, you know, you have coaches that kind of go intermittent on communication, because it does happen. You want to make sure that when you sit down and have conversations with coaches that you feel as though they want to coach you, they want you to be a part of their program, and they legitimately think that you're going to be someone who can come into their program and compete and play for them right away. And if they don't think that you can play right away, like I think a decent amount of them are going to tell you, like, hey, like, you're going to have the opportunity to play right away, but you're going to have to earn your playing time. You know, we have a junior or a senior in front of you who started a bunch of games last year and he's good. Like, but knowing those things going in and then saying, like, hey, like, you know, we're going to get you opportunities. You're going to have plenty of opportunities in practice. We're going to get you at bats. It's what you do with them and how that, you know, kind of pans out. Because the baseball season is a long season. Guys are going to get hurt and, you know, they need to develop the backup just as much as the front end guys, so that if dudes do get hurt, they want the guys who are behind them to be able to step in, you know, almost seamlessly. So, you know, I think being able to feel comfortable with the program itself from a teammate standpoint and from a coaching staff standpoint is probably the most important thing that I would say. You want to feel as though their communication is clear and, you know, you understand where you fit in. And, you know, because when you get to college, you want to be like, you want that communication to continue on, that, like, you feel as though you can ask questions and you can go to them with things. And, you know, everyone has an open door policy in college, but, like, you want it to legitimately feel as though, like, you can walk in and ask questions about anything. Like, it might not be about baseball. It might be about life, and class and school and things like that. So, you know, being able to feel comfortable and being able to do that with, you know, the coaching staff that's recruiting you, and also, you know, going on visits and being able to meet with teammates and, you know, future teammates if they are, and see if you feel like you're going to fit in that environment with those student athletes. Because, you know, I think that's one of the things that gets overlooked the most. You know, people kind of pick schools based off of offers and, you know, the name, and they get there and they're like, I don't fit in here. And I think that's something that is probably one of the most important things to be able to legitimately be able to figure out, so that you can land at the right place and find the right fit, so that you're good to go program wise and then also academically.
the people matter, right? The people that you surround yourself with, the other guys that you play with, the culture within a program, the coaching staff. It's hard to quantify how impactful it is and how much impact the coaching staff can have on you, both good and bad. And if you can find a place because you've done your homework and you've gotten a chance to build a relationship with those coaches and you have an understanding of what that program's about, that might be the most important part of your experience. And it doesn't mean that that experience is always easy. But if I put myself in a high school player's shoes right now, or I put myself in a parent's shoes, the big boxes that I want that coaching staff to check are that they're going to challenge and hold my kid accountable when he needs to be held accountable. They're going to get to know him so that they can coach him in a way that is going to be productive for him. It's not one size fits all. There's certainly rules and foundational principles that define each program. But is my son, or am I as a player, going to come out of that program 4 years from now a better person? Right. And a lot of that will be coaching, and it'll be the experiences you have from a baseball perspective. But you hit on some of the other pieces of the puzzle that I think don't get considered enough, which is, can you go to that coach if you're having a tough day, or if you have a life issue that you need to discuss with them? That's not always the case. And if you can find a group of individuals that coach that provide that type of environment where you can be challenged, but you can also be thoughtful and you can be empathetic and you can show up and work your butt off every day and you can be challenged, like, that's a unique thing. And from an experience perspective, that might be the thing that'll be most impactful for most kids as they go through their process, is that you find yourself in a program where you have to earn everything you get. You got a coach who cares a ton about you as a person and as a player. You're probably going to come out of that program better equipped to handle the real world when you graduate, because you're going to learn things that you don't learn in a classroom.
Yeah, you know, I think along the same lines is, you know, like, we got a text yesterday from, you know, one of our really good friends who coaches at a really, really great school. You know, and I think some of the other things, like, aside from the communication and exactly what you just said, but, like, take into account the school as well. You know, like, what are you going to get out of that school that's going to help you in life? Because, you know, we talk about college baseball on this podcast. We talk about a lot of different things, but obviously the center's around college baseball. You know, but the reality is, you know, there's an even smaller percentage of college student athletes that are going to be drafted or signed professionally, and an even smaller percentage that are going to go, like, make it to the big leagues. I mean, it's 2024, and I think we're up to, like, maybe 22,000. We can fact check me, but it's like 22 or 24,000 big leaguers in the history of the game. You know, so, like, the likelihood of that happening, even though we all had that dream, the likelihood of that happening is pretty small. You know, when you see all the NCAA commercials, like, we're going to go professional in something else, like, that is the truth for the vast majority of people. You know, and being able to kind of sort through the programs that are going to be able to not only, you know, help you compete and win and be the best baseball player that you can, but also be able to help you once you graduate from school, be it leadership or teamwork or alumni network, all those types of things that are going to be able to help you, you know, better yourself as you continue to graduate and get older and enter into the real world, so to speak. So, you know, I think that those are things, like, and that's, you know, a little bit, you know, I think those are things that kind of get overlooked sometimes when you're going through this process. Like, yeah, you know, I want to go play baseball, and you know, these are things that you want to think about. I'm not like, it might not be the most important thing for everybody, but it is something that you're going to want to think about when you start narrowing down the schools that you are getting offers from, right? Like, you know, I'm not saying like, we're just going to cast a wide net of only schools that are super high end academic and have great alumni networks. You know, when you start talking about things like that, like, you know, if I'm getting recruited and there, I know this one school A is, you know, churning out, you know, a lot of really good, high successful, you know, people that are leaders and all this other stuff. And the other school doesn't really have a strong alumni network. And there's not really a lot of, you know, not going on there. Like I might lean towards the school that can provide that for me, given that I feel that if all things are equal from a program standpoint, you know, so I think that those are things too, that like, you know, people don't necessarily think about going in. And I mean, let's face it, I didn't when I was 18 years old. Like I just kind of went to the school that I felt like I had the best relationship with the coaching staff and the players on the team, and it worked out for me. And look what we're doing now. You know, so it's not to say that like you have to think of those things, but I think like we would be remiss when we talk about this stuff that that's not something that should be a consideration as you're, you know, fielding offers and deciding what type of schools. Like you start splitting hairs when you really get down to it, when you're into the nitty gritty of it, of like, okay, what does school A provide, B, school C, whatever it might be. And those are things that might be the separators when you decide to make your decision.
No doubt about it. And I don't think we could probably harp on this for quite a while, but the people matter, and getting to know those individuals and figuring out if you're fit for that program, that's a really, really good place to start. The other thing, and we both come from this background, having worked at really prestigious institutions from an academic perspective, you know, with RPI and William and Mary and Vassar and whatnot, that using baseball as a mechanism to get an education is certainly part of the equation. And it doesn't mean that you have to be a super high-end student to do so, but the academic portion of it needs to be considered. And I understand that a lot of 17-year-olds don't know what they're going to study, or they don't know what they want to do long term. But you have to go in with an idea of what major you're going to go into. And you need to make sure that that school that you're going to is going to open up some doors, or at least have the academic curriculum majors that you're looking to potentially pursue, so that when you leave there after having spent quite a bit of money to get an education, that piece of paper and that degree that you're getting is going to help you in the next phase of your life, right? I think this is particularly important when you start to look at some more narrow focused degrees like engineering. If you want to be a doctor, you need to make sure that they have the curriculum that's going to allow you to go and pursue a PhD and get into med school. Like there is a little bit of a long game that you need to play, and you hit on it. There's been 23,000 major leaguers in the history of Major League Baseball, which goes back well over 100 years at this point. So just do the math. There's not a lot. So you have to have a plan post-baseball, whether your baseball career ends after college, whether it ends after your freshman year, or whether it ends after you play a few years of pro ball. You have to have something in your back pocket, or at least something that's going to be beneficial to you. So taking into consideration the type of degree you're going to get, and taking into consideration the academic portion of this puzzle, is really, really important. And for most kids, it's the thing that they need to lean on in this process in order to make sure that those 4 years are fruitful when you graduate.
Yeah, I mean, the academic side is, you know, and I feel like a lot of times it's the course, it's the path of least resistance. You know, it's business, or, and I'm not trying to say anything bad about business majors. I was a history major. You know, but I think a lot of times it's something that is a little bit, you know, it's kind of viewed of like, well, this is kind of secondary. I'm going to major more in baseball than I am in anything else. And that's, you know, to be honest, that was true of me. You know, but I, to your point, like being able to have a plan 1A, because, you know, the statistics are going to bear out that the vast majority of people aren't going to be able to play professionally and or, you know, specifically make it to the show. So, you know, being able to go to a school where you're going to be able to find the academic fit that you're looking for is something that is undeniably important in this process, because you can find yourself at a school that, you know, you might be not challenged in the classroom. And that doesn't, you know, just the same as it is on the baseball field, that's not really going to pay you any dividends moving forward. You're going to want to make sure that, you know, you're going to be challenged in the classroom to the capability that you can, you're going to be actually learning and doing things so that you do leave, when you do leave, you know, you have the skills to be able to succeed out in the real world. And I think sometimes, especially for, you know, and being at RPI, I saw it firsthand, you know, it's a super tough school to get through and the kids are challenged. And my opinion, I can say this now that I don't work there, sometimes a little bit too much. But those kids were prepared to go and enter the workforce and be successful in what it is that they needed to do. So I think sometimes, like, you know, you want that challenge, you know, you want to find that challenge, whatever that challenge is for you, you want to be able to find that challenge academically, you know, and I think the same hand, like, you want to be able to, you know, they go hand in hand, I should say. Like, you want to know that you're going to fit in on that campus as well from a social standpoint too. And I think it's the easiest way to describe it would be, you know, there's liberal and conservative college campuses out there. If you're someone who's a little bit more conservative, like, going to a liberal type college might not be the best fit for you. And vice versa. So, you know, figuring out those things as well, like, you know, campuses, even in the Liberty League, they're vastly different, even though the academic profile of some of those schools are very close and very similar. And we're recruiting some of the similar kids, like the campus feel at, you know, RPI and, you know, U of R or RIT are different, you know, and, you know, so it's same thing at, you know, Union and Skidmore and Bard and Vassar and Ithaca. Like, you know, I'm only using those schools because we played in that, I coached in that conference for 10 years. So, like, those campus feels are far different campus to campus. So, like, you know, you're going to want to make sure that you get to those campuses and kind of get the feel of what it is. And, you know, that's why, you know, we always tell people that you should, you know, try to visit some schools, get what the feel is during the summer. And it's hard when there aren't students there, but that's why it's critical to go on visits during, you know, in September to kind of get a feel for what campus is like and, you know, talk to the student athletes and the kids that are there to kind of get the feel for what that looks like so that you have an idea of what you're walking into. So you have all the information in front of you to make the best decision you possibly can.
100%. It's actually interesting looking back at it now, having coached. It's really cool to see what some of our former players have accomplished off of the baseball field. I mean, we had one of your former players on the podcast a while back who was, and we probably should check in with Mr. Jensen, but you're talking about a guy who's on the doorstep of flying in Top Gun. That's pretty cool.
He's even closer now.
Oh, so cool.
We haven't, as last I heard, which was about a month ago, he's a lot closer, which is cool. But it is, like, it's one of the unique things of, you know, and I'm sure this is true anywhere you coach, but I think it's one of the unique things when you're in the high academic world, you have some kids that, you know, come through and go do some super cool stuff that you never really fathomed were a thing. I had a guy who actually just got published, finished with me and then finished up at Delaware, Chris Grome. He just got published on, it's something about, essentially he's trying to build satellites that can resist UV rays up in space so that they stay up longer and we can save more money with not sending so many satellites into the atmosphere, which at no point in my life until he said that did I ever think that that was something that was a thing. He just got published and wrote an article about some of this stuff, and you know, I'm super proud of him and what he's been able to accomplish. So like seeing things like that is super cool. You know, it's not just flying fighter jets is pretty cool, but that stuff is just as cool to me. And you know, being able to see their successes from afar is why you did this in the first place.
Yeah, having watched guys become lawyers, doctors, entrepreneurs, starting their own businesses, finance. I mean, the list is pretty cool from some of the guys that I had the pleasure of coaching. The funny thing is that when you talk to them, and I know me and you keep in touch with a lot of our former players, they'll all come back to how the lessons they learned on a baseball field in the school that they chose because of the people had a really big impact on their ability to succeed after they got out of school. And that seems to be incredibly consistent across the board. So I think that kind of ties together kind of the first two topics of this podcast, is that the education and the environment that you're in from a school perspective matter, but the people that you surround you with and who help you get through those 18 to 22 year old years, which are funky years, like looking back on it, like you're trying to figure out who you are. You're trying to build confidence. You're trying to figure out where you fit in the world. You're trying to compete on the baseball field. Like, let's not pretend that this is an easy path for kids, and that, you know, college baseball and going to college is some easy task to complete. It's not. It's an interesting time as a student athlete. And if you have really good people and you're in a place that you're comfortable, you can really do some special things, not only when you're on the campus, but the results of those relationships and that experience ultimately propel you for success in the long term.
Yeah. You know, we were texting yesterday, me, you, Soups and Traz, and we were talking about heels and the stuff that maybe not necessarily everything we learned, but things that like you remember from your college years. And I mean, we're in our late 30s and early 40s, and there's still things that we remember and still things we, you know, when I was coaching, and I know those two still do, like things you'd say to your players that are, you know, they're just as relevant now as they were 20 years ago, you know. And I think that's those lasting impacts are, you know, not that Heels recruited any of us, but like, I'm grateful that I played for him and got to learn from him, because I think that he's one of the best, was one of the best in this business. Not that he's in it anyway. I mean, he is doing what he's doing, but, you know, from a coaching standpoint, like that dude knew a lot, and I'm grateful that we were able to kind of, you know, learn those things from him, you know. And same thing, like I'm grateful that I was able to be around Soups and Traz and those guys. Like those two are unbelievable baseball coaches. And I'm not just saying that because they were former teammates and, you know, some of our really good friends. Like, they're, to a man, they're phenomenal human beings, and they're also really, really good baseball coaches. And I think that, like, you know, we wouldn't be where we are today, and we wouldn't be able to do the things that it is that we're capable of doing without having been surrounded by guys like that. And, you know, I think that it's something that gets lost a lot in this game. Like, you know, you'll hear it when we talk about with other coaches, like everything in this game is stolen, right? Like, you know, there's very few super original ideas anymore. Everyone just kind of puts their own spin on it, which is fine. Like, that's what coaching is. You know, but I think when you can kind of surround yourself with, you know, with really good people and really good baseball guys, like you can find yourself having success not only in this game, but also, you know, with whatever it is that you choose to do afterwards, you know. And I think that's it. Look, man, I coached under Coach Rossi. I coached under Coach Rundles at West Alabama, who retired recently. I mean, he had like 40 years coaching. Carl, he had 38 years. Like, you know, there's a lot of guys I coached with that were, you know, a lot smarter than me. And, you know, I am who I am today, being able to do what it is that we do because I got to learn from, you know, some of the best. And I think that that's where, you know, I wish I was more aware of that at the time. You know, look, we're 18 to 22. Like, there's a lot of other things you're trying to do. I understand that. But I think that, you know, my point is that, you know, you want to be able to make sure that you're going to be surrounded by a group of guys that are really good human beings. They're really good people and they're really good coaches that are going to get you, you know, not only better baseball wise, but, you know, to walk out that door in 4 years as a better human being and a better man to be able to go face the challenges of what you're going to face in this world.
Well said. Well said. The other thing of importance, right? I want to get to one other topic, but I think we can talk about this for a little bit because I think this is really something that parents and players need to really think about is what is truly important to you? And this ties directly to the baseball portion of it. And the reason that I want to kind of frame it this way is that I think a lot of the answers to this question are often very generic. But what do you want your baseball experience to be? Because there's going to be a lot of guys out there that say, well, I want to play and I want to win and, you know, I want to be a part of a good program. But then they'll go to a school that isn't good, that doesn't win, because it has a label that they want as a part of their identity, right? And there's a lot of Division I schools out there that their ceiling is 16 wins and the culture is bad and kids transfer out and kids will get attracted to that because that's what they think that they want. They want to be a Division I player. But for the kids out there who say that development in people and education and an opportunity to play early in your career are important, you need to stick to those principles and not get caught up in what division a school is and really look for where's the best place for you to thrive. And I challenge players and families to really think about that. And your experience is going to be defined by those people and it's going to be defined by that environment. Do not sacrifice a temporary label for your four-year experience. Because there's a lot of kids who are going to go through this process in the next 3 or 4 months that are going to get some Division I interest and they're going to get offered a roster spot somewhere. But they're going to get a ton of love from a really good Division III program. And there are kids who are going to turn down that Division III offer. In a year from now, they're going to wonder why they did it. Because they didn't really have that honest conversation with themselves about, hey, I said that an opportunity to play early was important to me. I said that playing for a coach who really wanted me to be there was an important thing to me. But then when push comes to shove, I took a jersey so that I could say I was a Division I player. And I promise you that most kids who make that decision will not be happy with the outcome. And you need to really have a heart to heart about what you want to get out of this, because if you go and sit somewhere for 3 years and make no mistakes, make no ifs, ands, or buts about it, you need to earn everything you get, regardless of what program you get into, right? Just because you get offered a Division I roster spot and you go to a Division III school, it doesn't guarantee you're playing there, period. You got to earn it. But opportunity at different places is often easy to assess, right? The number of phone calls we've had, the amount of communication, the visit quality. What does that look like? And if you're getting a ton of interest from a school, it's probably because they really want you there and they probably have plans for you to be a part of that solution or a part of that program moving forward. So I would implore parents and players to really think about that. Really think about not just in the moment, what is the easy decision to make, but what is the right decision to make when you take into account the next 4 years of your life on a college campus.
Yeah, I don't I don't have much to add to that. That was a pretty good monologue there. You know, I think that so many times, you know, the dream of the scholarship and the dream of playing Division I baseball and this, that, and the other thing have been held for so long that given that opportunity, albeit maybe at a program that is not the strongest or the greatest or has a great culture, or you're going to develop there and there's not a lot of people that stay for 4 years and graduate, you know, people jump at that opportunity because, you know, since you started playing baseball at the age of six, you wanted to play in the show. And this is seemingly the easiest path to do that. And I've wanted to get a scholarship and I wanted to play Division I baseball. And you're blinded by some of the things that are, you know, pretty glaringly obvious to the people in the business. But also, you know, will become very clear when you set foot on campus in the fall of your freshman year. And you're going to start asking yourself, why did I make this decision? And your student athlete experience is going to suffer, you know, not only from a playing standpoint, from a development standpoint, from a winning standpoint, you know, and look, like we've talked about this before, a lot depends on, you know, what, you know, is there a coaching change and that's why they haven't been good in the last couple of years and now they're trying to inject some new life? Like, that's a different argument and that's a different conversation. Like, we're talking about, you know, same coaching staff. It, you know, they haven't been good in a number of years and I'm just, you know, they're going to offer me a spot and a little bit of money and I'm going to commit when I could go, you know, play at, and I'm going to throw it out there because they just won the Division III national championship. Like, I'm getting recruited by Misericordia and I could go play there, or Lynchburg, who won it 2 years ago, or Hopkins, who was in the finals, you know, and Randolph-Macon and Salve, like all these schools that were in the World Series this year and in recent years. You know, there, it's a super high brand of college baseball. And, you know, we've talked about this ad nauseum, and there's a lot of really good baseball being played at the Division III level where there's guys on those rosters that, you know, and I said it when I coached it before the transfer portal became an issue, like, you know, or a thing, you know, that there's Division I guys riddled all over Division III baseball. They just took longer to develop into those guys. They weren't those guys out of high school. They developed into those guys when they got to the program because that program was able to develop them. They got into a weight room. They grew. They got bigger. They got faster. They got stronger. And all of a sudden, by the time they're juniors and seniors in college, like, yeah, those kids could go play Division I baseball. You know, but under the old rules, you had to sit out a year. And, you know, let's face it, if you're a junior or a senior at a super high-end academic institution, like, you're probably not looking to transfer to give up the degree to just go play 1 year of Division I baseball to say you did. You know, so I think that it's something that you need to legitimately sit down and, like you said, have a heart-to-heart with yourself and your family about what it is that you want your student athlete experience to be. And what's that look like? You know, because I can promise you that getting your teeth kicked in for 54 games out of the year and not having a great experience that way is less superior to playing at a super competitive Division III school where you're going to be competing regionally and nationally and stacking up against some of the better teams in the country to kind of see what that looks like, you know, like a Denison or an Endicott, you know, and I'm just rattling off guys, teams that were, you know, have been good, but were really good this year. You know, those programs are, you know, they have really, really good players in them and they can play Division I baseball, but they're getting a far better student athlete experience and, you know, and being developed and playing in high end summer baseball and doing these things and getting a pretty good education while they're doing it. And, you know, I can promise you that student athlete experience is far better than the alternative of just saying, I get to play Division I baseball and we're going to be 12-46 this year. Because that gets to be, you know, monotonous and not fun to show up to the yard and do that every day.
Winning is fun and being a part of that equation is even more fun. And, you know, when you go through this process and you're getting recruited, you can tell when you're a big piece of the puzzle. and coaches really want you. So, I mean, you got to consider it, and it's something that you need to take the time to really think about. And I'd be remiss to say, in today's day and age of the transfer portal, like, if you go and you perform really well somewhere else, like, there's other opportunity. Like, if you don't get exactly what you want from a quote unquote playing level perspective, but you're going and you're awesome at another school, like, that is a legitimate option now. It wasn't as appealing before because of some of the restrictions around the transfer rules. But, you know, I don't think you should go into it necessarily with that mindset, but, you know, it's not as static as it used to be. And, you know, you want to play, you want to figure out how good you can be, right? I was talking to a family the other day, like, the goal is to find the right fit so you can figure out how good you can be at this game. Because at some point, somebody's going to tell you, hey, man, you don't get to play anymore. And right. You have a finite window to figure out, like, how good can I get at this game? It's a game that takes a ton of reps. It's a game that takes a ton of commitment. It's a game that has a ton of failure. But the more opportunity you get to play it, the better you get to get at it. And, you know, some guys that road ends a little bit longer. You know, you get to play pro ball or something. But for most people, you get 4 years in college and then somebody's going to say, hey, man, you got to turn in those cleats and you got to turn in that glove and we're going to go do something different. You want to make sure that the place that you go fulfills you from that perspective, that you feel like, hey, I legitimately had an opportunity to figure out how good I could be at this. And that I had the opportunity to be a part of a program that wins, that is successful, that you're playing for something. Competing for a conference championship or going to the NCAA tournament or going to the College World Series at the Division III level, I think is a lot more fulfilling for people than going to a Division I school. And the idea of success is that you finish as one of the top six teams in a conference. And hey, if you get a chance to be a high scholarship guy and you get a chance to be a part of a Division I program, like, go ahead, go do it. I'm not saying don't go play Division I baseball. That's not what I'm saying. But if you're one of those fringy guys where the Division III opportunity presents itself, really think about what that four-year experience is going to look like. Because I think it matters. And, you know, if you come out and you have a really good experience because your coach is awesome and you get the degree you want and you're a part of a program that wins and takes it serious and the programs run really well, you're going to be a lot happier.
I couldn't agree more. You know, I was thinking as you were saying this, and I can get behind, and I'm not endorsing this. I'm going to say this. I'm going to get behind it, but I don't endorse it. But I can get behind the idea nowadays of, like, if a kid is a Division III kid, let's say, and, you know, they develop, they're really good, blah, blah, blah. Like, I can get behind the idea of a kid who might want to transfer out and try to play Division I baseball if they're looking to play more baseball, have a full fall, practice, you know, have individuals and be around the game a lot more and things that you can't do at the Division III level. Like, I can understand that mind, that thought process and that mindset, which led me down a road of, I just thought of this, like, I would be interested in the next couple of years, because I think they're going to try to quell some of the transfer portal stuff. Like, I would be interested to see, like, what Division III decides to do, because I could see them in an effort to suppress some of the transferring that's going on, of guys leaving, of allowing coaches to do more coaching at the Division III level. That's not to say that there's, like, a mass exodus of Division III guys. I'm just saying I could see that being a thing where it's like, well, you know, why only, I mean, you can have more days now in the fall, but it's still 4 days a week. Like, let them have a full fall. Like, what does it matter? Let them go practice for 35 days in the fall. Like, I coach at RPI. It's one of the tougher schools in the country. Like, I know that my guys after the fall had numerous days during the week where they could come hit with me for 30 minutes and it wouldn't put any wrinkle into their day. like you can do individuals at that level, and you can develop guys more, and guys can be around the game more. And I think the other argument that I you know, I always made this argument when I was coaching, like it provides me an opportunity to be around my players more and keep tabs on them, not only from a, you know, not that I'm trying to, you know everything that's going on, but I can make sure that they're going to class. I can make sure that they're up on their schoolwork. I'm not going to get blindsided by them getting a 1.8 that semester because I haven't heard from them in, you know, 3 months because technically they don't have to do anything. You know, so I always kind of thought that that was a something that they should do. And I would be interested to see if that's something that, you know, kind of comes down the pike a little bit to allow coaches to have a little bit more of an off season and a little bit more of contact with their players outside of the traditional season and their kind of non-traditional segment that allows coaches to be able to coach a little bit more, keep tabs on their players and, you know, make sure that they're doing okay mentally, make sure that they're doing okay in the classroom and also be able to coach them and develop players so that when you get into the spring, it's not just a race to, you know, try to get everybody on board and in the fastest and healthiest way possible, which I don't think is the best way. So, you know, for any of the Division III coaches out there that are still coaching, like I'm behind you on that one. I'll be your spokesperson. I think that that's something that should be thought about and kind of brought to the forefront. See if maybe that is, because I think, you know, it benefits everybody. It benefits the student athlete. It benefits the coaches and it benefits the program to be able to kind of do those things. So, legally, obviously, you know, so I think that that's something that would be interesting to see over the course of the next couple of years, because I think some things are going to change. I don't know what they are. This is just conjecture at this point, but I do think they're going to try to start doing some stuff to kind of quell all of this portal stuff. Yeah, sorry, I got on my soapbox there of
an idea. I agree with you 100% because I never really bought into the idea that not having them do anything was the beneficial thing to do at the Division III level. I think that most of the kids who are 18 to 22, they thrive on structure. And it's not that you're micromanaging them, but even if it's an hour and a half of time a week that you get with a kid in an individual, like that's 3 30-minute sessions. Like, I think that there's value in them having to show up to things. And
it's not a
baseball thing. It's, to your point, it's a personal thing.
I agree. And I think, like, I mean, let's face it, like we coached this game for 25 years together, combined. We didn't coach together, but everyone knows what we're saying. But the, you know, I don't care what level of baseball you're playing, whether it's 1, 2, or 3, like if you're playing Division III baseball and like those are kind of the restrictions that are put on you, like it doesn't matter if it's baseball, lacrosse, football, hockey, whatever, like those kids are there to play that sport. Like they actively want to be able to go do things with their coaches. Like it's not just a hobby. And I think that that's something that gets lost in the Division III world of like, well, you know, they're here at this school and they, you know, they just play baseball. Like, no, they're here to play baseball and win and compete and learn things about themselves and failure and how to pick themselves up and do those things. And you're not allowing the coaches to be able to instill a lot of those things over the course of half of a year. You know, you know, it used to be, you got 16 days. Like you literally coached for 16 days in the fall, 4 days a week for 4 weeks. And then that was it. You were supposed to be really good in the spring. You know, and it's not necessarily, you know, yes, it is about wins and losses, but like you can get guys better if you have more days in the fall, obviously. You can get guys better if you have individual time to be able to work with them. You can also make sure that they're doing okay. Like that's a big part of making sure, especially your freshmen, you know, and that was one of my biggest arguments, and we're getting a little off track here and I'm sorry, but like that was one of my biggest arguments with freshmen at the Division III level. Like, you know, like, yes, you get a relationship with them during the season or during the recruiting process, but like, you know, they don't really get a feel for you as a coach until, you know, they're damn near done with their freshman year of college because they only get you for 16 days. Like, and you, everyone knows, like, fall's a little bit more lax, but like, you know, they don't really get a feel for you as a coach until, you know, almost a year later. And I think that it's doing a disservice to the kids and their experience, because now, you know, they could have, you know, they could know all of this stuff. Like, they can get a feel, and the coaches can get a feel for these kids and know how to coach them and know what makes them tick. And, you know, there's like, you miss some things where kids are really struggling, and it's like, well, you know, I didn't really know because he didn't come in and tell me. Like, every time we met with him, like, everything was fine. And like, as the season wears on, you're like, there's something amiss here that you probably could have picked up on a lot earlier if you were able to be around that kid a little bit more from a coaching standpoint. So, you know, I think the overall experience, like, and I'm not putting down the student athlete experience at Division II level. Please do not mistake that. Like, I think it is amazing. I coached it for 10 years. I was a head coach for 5. Like, it is an unbelievable student athlete experience at vast majority of places. I'm just saying that I think it can be enhanced and be better with a couple tweaks of rules. I think it's amazing. You know, and it's a great place, and, you know, it's super competitive to play baseball. I'm just spitballing in my mind, and I'm getting off topic. So I'm sorry.
No, but you're absolutely right. Cause you can't hang your head on to student athlete experience, but take the athlete out of that experience for a significant amount of time. Right. And yes. Then you just, because the expectation doesn't change. And that's the other thing that people don't realize, is that just because we're not able to work with them, like, the kids who care about it, they're doing it anyways. So why not let the coaches be there? That was always my stance, is that I got kids coming down to hit throughout the day in October and November when the weather's decent, but I can't go down there and work with them. But they're down there anyways. So, like, what, you know, they're taking time out of their day to do it. Let's have a little bit of supervision in there. Let's, you know, let's be able to guide these kids and be a part of that, because, you know, ultimately those kids want to get better. Like, the level of give a shit at the Division III and Division I level for the athletes who are there, who really care, it's not any different.
No.
They still lift. They put in all the extra reps. There's just less, quote unquote, mandatory activities. But right. The expectation is that, you know, our fall ends middle of October. You don't just put down the bat for the next 6 weeks or 8 weeks and then come back in January and like, oh, like, we'll get it started again. Like, no, like, now's the weight room. Now's time to put some adjustments into your swing and, you know, get that stuff done. So I agree with you 100%. I think it's not about, it's about enhancing it is really what it comes down to, is that there's a level that it could get to that can make that experience even better and not take away from the student portion of that experience.
Thank you. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk tonight.
The other topic that I think we got to cover before we end is, because it's real, is the financial piece. Baseball is not a full scholarship sport, even at the Division I level. And, like, oh yeah, there's outliers where you get into the NIL money and that kind of stuff. But let's be honest, there's the vast majority of Division I schools aren't dishing out NIL money. And there's a lot of Division I programs that aren't fully funded. So the financial piece is important. And there's, you know, even families who are very well off, like, and there's going to be some kids that never have to worry about this. And great, like, you're in a good situation. Your parents worked really hard and they put you in a spot where you can make a decision independent of the financial ramifications of paying $40,000 or $50,000 a year to go to school. That's awesome. But for a lot of people, college is really expensive. And you need to take that into consideration when you're looking at some of these schools and make sure that you're targeting schools that are going to be in an area financially that are going to make sense for you, right? So, like, if you're a New York State kid, you need to think about those in-state schools because the cost of the education is going to be significantly lower. You know, if you're in Virginia, where I am, who has a really robust in-state school system, you have a lot of options. But as soon as you go out of that state system, you're getting into that $50,000, $60,000 a year range for the vast majority of private institutions or out-of-state institutions. So the bill that you have to foot it's big. And you have to be honest about where you sit from a financial perspective so that you can be targeted in how you approach this. The other piece of the puzzle is that the academics really factor into this, and you can leverage your academic success into more money, academic-based money, that is available to you because of how well you did in school. And it's something that we preach to everybody that we work with, but you want to make sure that you're putting your best foot forward in the classroom, because one, it keeps doors open, but two, it will have financial ramifications down the road. And even if you're a Division I guy, if they're able to stack and you get a 25% baseball offer, which is the minimum, but you get yourself another 15 or 20% because you did really well in school and that place is an academic fit for you, like all of a sudden you go from having to pay $20,000, $25,000, or excuse me, going having to pay $50,000 a year to like, oh, all right, well, now the bill's down to 25 because I was a good student. And that's a big piece of the puzzle for a lot of people. And I think it's the one other thing I would want to add to this is that I think that junior college baseball is going to really see a significant uptick. It's obviously really talented. We've talked about this before. There's a lot of junior college programs that pump out Division I scholarships, guys, like it's going out of style. But I think the reduction in cost to go to a junior college for 2 years, get a chance to develop, get a chance to play, and then still end up with a four-year degree, I think is going to become a lot more appealing. And I think it's a route that a lot of people should really consider when you're taking into account the long term. Don't worry so much about what does your high school commitment look like, but what does your four-year experience look like from a financial perspective, from a development perspective? And, you know, where do you go after that sophomore year where you're probably a lot more of a recruitable athlete because of the fact that you're 2 years older and you've got 400 at bats under your belt? But the financial ramifications of going to junior college, I think, are pretty significant and something that a lot of people should be open to as they go through this process.
Couldn't agree more. You know, I think the JUCO route is, you know, has always been there, and it's generally always been a really good option for players to be able to go play baseball and develop and finish at a 4-year school. You know, your degree after your fourth year, when you finish your bachelor's, doesn't say, you know, there's no asterisk on it. Like it's from the school that you graduated from, the same as any other student who was there for 4 or 5 years. So, you know, it doesn't, you know, the academic side of it is irrelevant. But I think, you know, you nailed the cost effectiveness. You know, like when I was coaching RPI, Hudson Valley had a program, you know, their engineering program. If you had a 3.0 there, like you were a free transfer into RPI. There were kids that were recruited out of high school that, you know, that got into RPI and they couldn't afford 4 years. You know, they went to Hudson Valley and they played a ton and developed. And honestly, they probably played a little bit more in those first 2 years at Hudson Valley than they would have played for us. And then when we, you know, they transferred into RPI as juniors and ended up getting, both of them ended up getting their masters, you know, and one was interning with NASA, you know, so it was like, and they had a lot of success with us. One ended up being a captain, even in 2 years with us. So, you know, I think it's one of those things where, you know, a lot of people think that it's not necessarily something that they want to do. And, you know, I don't really know why. You know, I think obviously there's a little bit of a stigma around junior colleges because it's, you know, it's the community college, like it's what it is. But from a there's a lot of people who have gone to community colleges and found a lot of success afterwards, not only in athletics, but I think, like, you know, especially when, you know, I think one of the other options too that you have nowadays is, you know, the kids that might necessarily not have played a whole lot as freshmen in college who then are looking to transfer, but, you know, you don't really have the stats to really put up to go transfer somewhere else, or you don't have the video, or, you know, when they come see you, like maybe you were hurt, whatever it might be. You know, the JUCO route is a great route because you can go play 14 or 15 games in the fall. You can play 50 plus games in the spring. And there's a lot of innings that are available to be able, you know, if you're a pitcher, and there's a lot of innings that are available if you're a hitter, to be able to kind of get those innings and that development. And there's no real rules. Like, you can play baseball 24/7, 365. You know, so like that development piece, especially for, you know, some younger guys, if they, you know, they're a little bit of a, you know, they're looking to transfer, and, you know, I think it's a worthwhile look and investment, because you know you can bang out a lot of your the courses you need, and then you can transfer where you need to go. But the academic piece that, you know, there's not much I can really add on to what you said. Like, it's super easy when you coach at a high academic school to be able to just kind of be like, all right, well, these kids can't get into this school, and it's super easy. The other part is that the better your grades, the more doors are going to stay open to you. And the other part is you hit the nail on the head. Like, the amount of academic money that's available to you is just as much as anyone else. So, you know, if you have really good grades and you have strong test scores and you took, you know, take some APs or IB credits, whatever it might be, like, you're going to command a little bit more academic money, and that lowers your cost, your total cost of attendance. And, you know, now schools that you thought might not have been affordable become affordable because you get scholarship money, or you get a boatload of academic money at a Division III school because they can't give athletic scholarships. And things become affordable for you. So, the importance of being able to stay on what you need to do academically in high school is paramount. I wish I did a little bit more when I was a kid, because I probably would have got a little bit more academic money. But it's something that I wish a lot of people, and your parents harp on it, and it's something that, till they're blue in the face, they're going to tell you that you need to get good grades. But it's very true, because it's going to leave more doors open for you, and you're going to command a lot of academic money, which in the long run is going to, lower your cost of attendance, and you don't have to take out hundreds of millions of dollars worth of loans to afford going to college.
That is correct. Any other tips? Any other things that you think families should be considering that are important? I mean, I think we covered a bunch of them, the people, the academics, the environment that you're in, finances, thinking deep about what you're trying to get out of the experience. Like, anything else you want to add?
I would probably the only other one I would add is how comfortable of a distance is enough for you to be from home. And I say that because if you're looking at high-end academic schools, the vast majority of those high-end academic schools, and specifically if you're looking in the Division III world, are in from New England to the Mid-Atlantic, we'll call, right? So, it's not to say that there's not good schools elsewhere, but I guess the comparison I'm trying to draw here is, like, if you're a West Coast kid and you're looking to go to a small liberal arts type college or a STEM school, and you're looking, you're looking at a U of R or an RPI or a Tufts, and you don't want to go to, University of Washington that has, I don't even know how many people they have, but I know it's a lot more than those schools. You're going east. Are you comfortable jumping on a plane and going east and playing college baseball? And there's a lot that are, right? Like, go look at the rosters. I had multiple guys from the West Coast when I was at RPI. I know that the schools in that conference do. You recruit out west. The Ivy Leagues do. The NESCACs do. Like, Hopkins does. A lot of those schools do. So I think that, and there's guys from Texas. There's guys from Florida. Like, they're everywhere. So I think that that's one of the other questions. I'm saying it's specific to that, but you pull that thread, like, are you comfortable only being within an hour, a 2 hour radius of home? Are you comfortable being, is it okay to be 5-6 hours away? And what does that look like? And I think that that's a conversation to be had, and what, the drive to DC could take you 3 hours. It could take you 9 hours. Who knows what that's going to look like. So, like, are you comfortable with that? And, I think that those are things that you want to be able to kind of take, and you should think about as well, because, coming from the West Coast and going east can be a little bit of culture shock, and vice versa. Like, if you're getting recruited by West Coast schools, like, hey, like, the West Coast schools are going down to Georgia and watching kids play. Like, they're coming to the East Coast and watch kids play. They're going down south. Are you comfortable jumping on a plane and going to the West Coast and playing out there? Or going from the north to the south or the south to the north. You know, because every Northeast kid says they want to play in, you know, South Carolina. And my video just went away, so I'm sorry if you're watching on YouTube. But the, you know, I think it's one of those things, like you want to be able to make sure that you're going to be comfortable going as far, like where, what's the comfortability of the length of distance and time that you're willing to go away for college? Because I think, you know, you can end up getting homesick. You can end up getting, you know, you might not want to be a plane right away. You know, so there's all those things, you know, those type, that's probably the only thing I would add to this conversation, but it is that, you know, those are something that you want to kind of take into consideration, because the last thing you want to do is get on campus your freshman year and be like, damn, man, I'm way too far from home and I can't handle this, when you probably had other opportunities that were closer to home that you could have, you know, jumped on earlier and kind of felt like you found the better fit there. So that would be the only thing I would add to this conversation.
No, and I think that's a valid point and something to really strongly consider, because, you know, it's one thing to be able to hop in a car and get home. It's another thing to have to get on a plane. You know, for those of you who have tight family situations, you know, you want to think about that stuff. And then, you know, obviously if you're flying from the West Coast to the East Coast, make sure you're doing it for the right reasons, that the school's the right fit for all the other factors that we talked about, or vice versa, East Coast to West Coast. But which you don't see quite as much, but still, yeah, it's certainly a valid thing to consider and something that you're going to want to discuss. And, you know, the initial reaction for a lot of kids is like, oh, I don't really care how far I am from home. But the truth is, a lot of kids, when you get down to the nitty gritty, like they want to be able to hop in a car and go home on a weekend if they have a free weekend. Like that's a valuable thing in the college process. So something to really consider there. All right. Well, I think we covered that one tonight, Coach.
Yeah, I think we nailed that one.
Any closing remarks?
Nope.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening. Join us next week, and we will talk to you soon. Thanks, everybody. Thank you for listening this week. If you're watching on YouTube, go ahead and hit that subscribe button and smash that like button for us. Check us out on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, as well as Spotify. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at EMDBaseball. If you want to find out what me and Keith do to help families and players navigate the recruiting process, go ahead and check us out on EMDBaseball.com. Take a few minutes to check out our new online academy. I promise you'll get some good information out of that. Thanks again for listening. Check in with you next week.